Eisenborn, Reel 4.
Yes, I remember one case, but I think it was the only time there was one remark in my house that somebody said to somebody who was not in the house, meaning some other in the camp. Oh, he's a Gentile. That means he's a non-Jew, and he's under suspicion. So I objected to that. I said, "How dare they say such a thing?" You know, you, I addressed the Jew, you had to leave because you were forced by Hitler, but he went voluntarily. So don't please and say that he's a sympathizer with Hitler. You see. But then I never heard any accusation in this respect again. It was perhaps a kind of a stupidity or something, but it was, I can't remember the name anymore. Anyhow, he was a camp father, and see, he made a kind of suggestion he may be sympathetic to the Nazis. But there were many people who were outstanding journalists and so on who had been fighting against Hitler for years and were then interned. I mean, that was just a bad luck.
Were you able to get news of what was happening in the rest of the world?
Oh, yes. They even introduced later on radios. So we could hear. Of course, we knew. And then, of course, whilst I was in the camp, there was the Battle of Britain. Then we knew that that was a victory for this country. And, of course, we all hoped that it would be a victory. That was, of course, a rather difficult position. I mean, I love Germany, but of course I didn't wish that Hitler would be victorious, no doubt. So, but then it was after about Christmas 1940 that at last I got a notice that I was released. You know. And that was, of course, a great relief to me, and I immediately joined the firefighters, and that was quite interesting. I lived in Clanricarde Gardens, which is a small street near Notting Hill Gate, and there was an old Indian colonel who was in charge, and I took over, and another old gentleman who lived next door to me. And one day, it was just rather a night with firebombs raining down, and we both were on duty, and a patrol came. It was British people, and they found us. Oh, at last we find somebody on duty. Very good. You know. And we had a nice day, isn't it lovely? So, yes, of course. And then they said, oh, by the way, you are not English? Said, no. What are you? I'm German. Oh, and what are you? I'm Italian. Oh, good. Reliable enemies. So that was really quite a little episode, but it was so funny, and it shows even the attitude of that patrol. They didn't mind a bit. I must say, I never had any difficulties, neither with my milkmen or shopkeepers. They knew, of course, that I was a foreigner or an alien, but I had really no trouble whatsoever. It was a blessing. I think it was different in the First World War. It was more difficult.
Yes. Were you released in recognition of your art?
That I really, maybe, but I don't know. That was it. Just there were a number of English artists who joined and wrote letters. And then I even wrote letters in some public papers, and said it's ridiculous that these people, and they mentioned by name, who have been outstanding, fighting against Hitler, and or in, that they should be interned. So anyhow, we were then released. So
how much notice did you have that you were going to be released?
Oh, about a couple of days. It was hardly anything. No, nothing. Good. One always has a feeling there is a kind of possibility, but the definite notice was, I think, a couple of days. So tomorrow you can go. Good enough. So we had to, how was it? I think we had to go on the boat from Douglas and then to Liverpool and then catch a train. And of course it was quite exciting to come to London and hear the sirens. So we came, arrived in London at night, and I was amazed how the taxis, so they drove me there and the area. They took it all. That was the most impressive, how the British public took the air raid. It's almost if there are now an hour of rain coming, it will be over in half an hour. It's quite fantastic. Unfortunately, it was like that because what I feared again was a compulsory visiting the bunkers. You know, fortunately, nobody forced me to leave my room because. So what could you do? I mean, to be in a bunker, that was a horrifying idea, or in a basement. But at least I could work. If I was blown up, so what? Then it's over. But at least I could work. Of course, I had to make a blackout, no doubt, but at least I was free and could do one. The funny thing was, when I first went to a shop, into my grocery shop, and I asked for a dozen eggs, and they looked at me rather in astonishment, and they must have thought I come out of prison or out of a lunatic asylum. They said, "You may have won." And I realized there was the rationing on. But on the whole, the rationing was absolutely plentiful. I think it was more than enough because fish was never rationed. I think bread was not rationed, coffee wasn't rationed, was very cheap, and the food rationing was plenty, because I remember the First World War, even as a soldier in the First World War, we went out digging potatoes under machine gun fire of the enemy, only to get some potatoes. So that was a difference here.
Did you carry on with your work that you'd been doing before after you were released?
Immediately, oh yes. As a matter of fact, I actually started a new line, which was engraving, wood engraving, which I hardly did in Germany, and that was a new way. That was partly because I thought if I make my own engravings, the printers, with whom I wasn't always very satisfied, must print better. Because if you make a line block, that could be rather badly done. But if I make my own engravings, that was printed from the block then. That was part of the reason. And then, of course, it is a wonderful medium. And you can experiment in a small space, in a small size, and it's an exciting work of art. And then, of course, I did a lot of sketches of London during the Blitz. Although I could have been given the sketching permission. But it never arrived. I applied several times, but it took too long. But I went occasionally to this city or London and saw the devastation, all the smoking ruins. But of course, the danger was if I would have been seen sketching, they may have sent me back to the camp. You know? I wanted to avoid it. So I actually made only memorizing sketches, sometimes the palm of my hand as big as a matchbox. I made a little sketch, and took these sketches home, and from these sketches I made lino cuts about a foot square, which I think are quite strong. I made about 20, so it is not absolutely a naturalistic reproduction of the scenes, but it is a kind of a metaphorical interpretation of the London scene. They haven't been published yet, but the War Museum has a whole set, so far, as far as I know.
I've seen a couple of the small prints that you did in Hutchinson camp, things like invitations and, and so on.
Yes.
They were linoleum cuts.
There were some linoleum and some, I think, a kind of a multiply or where you can kind of a lithographic process where you can draw something and then it's. But I think the process was very unsatisfactory. It was not very. I'm not very proud of the results which I produced, except the liner cuts perhaps. But it was not the best ever done.
Is it true that the artists in Hutchinson tore up the landlady's lino off the floor for
that
materials
is,
make lino cuts?
That is very possible. But that, of course, I think they did a lot of looting there. I'm quite sure. I personally didn't because I had my own, but I used liner which I found in the attic with little pieces. That is very possible. That did. I think they did even other things. That they took a piece of furniture and made a wood carving out of this. And of course, but if you have 2,000 people caged in, you must expect almost anything. I don't want to excuse it or pardon it, but it just happens.
What can you tell me about the mental state of you and the other people in the camps? Most of the people were Jewish. Most of you had spoken out against Hitler and so on.
Mm.
Were definitely on the side of Britain in most cases, and yet here you were treated as aliens and criminals and prisoners.
Oh, that we soon have forgotten. I think that is... nobody took a great objection to that. No, I mean, we never. I mean, it was at the time, I remember one outstanding journalist giving a speech, and he said, he gave a lecture on the political situation, because he was in the political forefront. And he said, it's a very bad sign if a nation can't distinguish between its foes and friends. You know, that I remember. But he was an outstanding man. The average people, I think, that the internment, they just thought, what, we are enemies, so we are just interned, and as they soon released most of them, so there was not much reason to be grudging or even be depressed. It was not. I can't forget. It was not a pleasant time, but I don't blame anybody for this. Is that now?
Yeah? Yes.
Yes. The condition in our house, the spiritual condition among us, that was very pleasant. Now, perhaps it may have been that my house was perhaps in a very pleasant condition, as I really spent all my time cooking. And trying, and of course later on, when anybody got a little parcel with some porridge or something, and you made a soup out of this or added to a soup, so that was of course one thing improved the other the next day. But even so, we had a very charming little Jewish house father who liked to speak a lot, and he gave his orders. Every day we, of course, issued orders from the commander, you know, which had to be followed, something with blankets or something was missing or God knows what. Always was something to be amended. And that was, but the whole atmosphere was, on the whole, very pleasant. Occasionally, I will admit, yes, now I remember, were a few rivalry between one who was, he felt insulted and so on. So occasionally it happened. But on the whole, the atmosphere, it was pleasant. It was not, there was no enmity and no problem whether somebody was German, Austrian, or Czech. Or, no, Czechs were hardly interned. You know, only the came perhaps from Czechoslovakia. Or even class distinction, no problem whatsoever. That is no. That was very smooth and pleasantly solved. And with some, I was even very friendly terms. But I must admit that as soon as the internment was over, my connections remained only with a few. That was the Friedenthal and Jakobsthal, all what's the name, writers or artists. That is what's interesting. I would say about a dozen people whom I met in the camp, we formed almost a friendship or very close relationship. And some have died in the meantime, of course, but with Friedenthal I'm a very good friend, and with Franke, who was interned, Mitchley, he was a younger man, he became a colleague of mine at my art school. So that it was actually quite an interesting result that really a friendship has developed from there. But it was necessary, but that's another point of view. There were definitely some here who were caught, who wouldn't would have been like to have been back. I was with one, he was an archaeologist, very pleasant man. And I don't think he was released, but perhaps he did not sever his, because I severed my relations, I came and immigrated here. But he didn't, he had his wife still in Germany. And perhaps for this reason he didn't dare to plead for release, because, I mean, he wanted to go back. But I don't think he was a Nazi, I can't imagine. We never discussed it with him, but I don't think he was. But he did some excavations, and he was even later allowed to do some excavating on the Isle of Man whilst he was interned, especially as he was in for the whole duration. You know. He didn't apply for being released. Of course, it was a difficult position. In my case, it was, of course, I burned my ships in Germany. But he wanted to go back. So.
Of course, then, after the war, Leipzig was in the Russian zone.
No, yeah, no. But I have been back, you know. So I was wondering. I don't want to go back again. It's too depressing. No pressure. I think we are finished.